This is a conversation with Ruth Hirsch in Jerusalem. Hi, Ruth.
Hi, Serge.
So you've been focusing for a long time?
Mm-hmm. I started focusing in 1993, took classes in 1994, and started teaching in 1995.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll say a little bit about that, which is that when I first got into focusing, I signed up for level one thinking that this would be something that would be really good for me, to work with the very, very strong inner critic that I had. And I took a small class with Ann Weiser Cornell. There were three of us, three women therapists, one of whom changed in level two. I went on to level two, and somewhere in level two I was hooked. And I can't even tell you exactly. I don't remember. I just remember that, oh, there was a feeling of, yes, I want to learn this and I want to teach it. I want to share it with other people. So at that point, I made the commitment to go on and be certified. And also at that point, I started using it with clients. Mm-hmm. I was at that time, I was a body worker. I had earned my master's in social work and master's in public health. And thinking that I would be a public health social worker, mm-hmm. when I went out to look for work, what was available was were jobs, even at that time in the 90s, where the caseloads were very large and the opportunity to do in-depth work with people was extremely minimal. This is just segueing off of focusing for a moment. So I actually left thinking it was for a break to learn massage therapy, and got very interested in it and was working professionally as a massage therapist. And then I got into acupressure and emotional balancing and all different kinds of somatic therapies. So I had a private practice. Actually, I've been working in a private practice since 1989. And I was at that time teaching massage when I started learning focusing. And I had a student who came up to me and said that he had been in psychotherapy for 7 years, twice a week. And he had this feeling, and he pointed to his chest. He had this feeling in there that there was all this sadness, but he couldn't connect with it. And could I help him with that?
Mm.
And so I said, wow. I said, well, I don't know. I don't promise anything, but I've been studying this new work called focusing. And I'd be very happy to, we could do a session and see if it helps. Mm-hmm. And you like it, we can do more. So he came for a session, and that was the beginning of my combining focusing and touch.
Okay. So it feels very nice to hear that background of how, in a way, you were in a period of figuring out what to do and where to use your skills. And mm-hmm. There were many avenues, social work, something that would be larger scope at the society level, but you were dissatisfied with how little opportunity working as a social worker you'd have to do in-depth work. And mm-hmm. it's through your work as a massage therapist that you found this opportunity to go deeper into maybe using focusing to help people understand themselves.
Right. So That was a great response. So I was doing, integrating focusing with what I then called my work conscious touch. It was basically a type of acupressure, Chinese medicine, that was mm-hmm. hands-on. The work is called Jin Shin. So it's a very subtle kind of work done on a massage table. The client has their clothes on. It's something that's very respectful and feels, I think, very safe, too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's work that is deep without touching in a deep way. So people are always amazed at how different they feel without me having pushed deeply or trigger points or any of that kind of thing. So for me, integrating focusing into that just felt really, really natural and easy. It felt to me like I was doing a dance. So a hands-on, I had my hands on, and when I started doing the focusing, it was helping people bring out what's inside of them to make it more conscious as well. So I was doing that work. I did that work from 1994 up until maybe about 5 years ago. I was doing it very actively. Mm-hmm. But just to give a progression of my work here, and then we can go in depth in something to something that might feel right, is that I was specializing in focusing in touch, doing workshops at the internationals that I attended on focusing in touch. And when I started coming to Israel as a visitor in 2000, the first year that I was here, I took a vacation from my practice. And the second year I came for 4 months, so I wanted to give my clients the opportunity to continue with the work long distance. And obviously it was going to be very different because I wouldn't have my hands on them.
Yeah.
So I gave them the option to try a session of just focusing on the phone, see if they like it. And every single one of them not only liked it, but they missed the hands, and yet what I noticed is that the work was more powerful. Mm. It went much deeper, and this is not to say that focusing and touch is not an incredible combination, and it's still something that I love. There's something that happened when, it could be partially because we were working on the phone and partially because it was just focusing. I don't know exactly. I'd love somebody to do some research on this, but something very special happened, and that people were making more changes in their lives than they had been before. So that's one thing that's important that I want to share about that.
Yeah, so the context in a way is that you started with massage therapy, and then you introduce focusing with it, but in a form of touch that was a more gentle touch, not the kind of very strong pressure that people sometimes associate with massage. And then once you moved away from a touch altogether because you were dealing with people by phone, you discovered that with the focusing alone, there was actually something really powerful happening in terms of people being able to experience shifts and changes.
Right, right. Right. And after after I moved here, in 2002, I wanted to continue my teaching. So it took me a few years to get up the nerve to try teaching on the phone. I started in 2005. And I actually started it not with an actual focusing levels course, but with one of my other passions besides touch, which is Judaism and bringing, helping people kind of bring spirituality to a level, an embodied level, to really connect in a way that they hadn't been able to connect before. So I led a workshop on preparing for the Jewish High Holy Days with focusing. And I did that on the phone, and it went well. So I decided, okay, I can teach levels now on the phone. That went well. So that was the beginning of pretty soon after starting to teach all four levels on the phone.
So actually, as you mentioned, teaching on the phone, I'm curious what your experience is teaching on the phone versus teaching in person.
Mm-hmm. So that's a question many people ask. And what I say, what I really feel is that teaching on the phone, that it has its advantages and it has the other side too. So, because I still do groups, I do groups here in Jerusalem. Teaching on the phone has a level of, actually they both have a level of intimacy and it's different. The intimacy on the phone, you can feel the having other people that you're focusing with or learning right there in your ear just has an effect that you don't get when you're in person.
Mm-hmm.
In person, there's the visual, which can be distracting, and it can also be enhancing. So I don't mean to be ambivalent, but I really see that there is, my sense has been that the learning is actually deeper on the phone,
yeah,
and it sticks more,
so
because there isn't the distraction.
Yeah, I'm hearing you say something, it feels a little similar to what people say, that a blind person gets a lot more information from the words than a person who sees, and that, you know, just having the audio alone, you know, there's a focus on that, and maybe just it goes directly into the ear.
Mm-hmm. Right, right. I think also there's probably a clearer connection with the felt sense on the phone, working on the phone, than there is in person. I find that in person there's more of a socializing that happens. So, connecting with the other members of the group might be stronger.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual learning of focusing seems to be more powerful in the groups. And I've also found that people in the groups tend to carry focusing further and to keep their focusing partners longer.
When it's on the phone.
When it's on the phone, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about a sense of something that seems more deep, more lasting. For you as the person who's teaching, what's it like? You know, not seeing the people, connecting by phone, not seeing people's reaction to what you're saying.
It can be more challenging. For me as a teacher,
mm-hmm.
It takes more energy to believe. It's interesting because, it does take more energy because it feels like there are more balls in the air to be kept track of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So maybe that's a state of, you know, in a way more alert, more paying attention to what might be happening, heightened attention, say more balls in the air, as opposed to the reassurance of having that sense of automatic feedback from looking at people.
Right. There, you miss something because you don't have the visual.
Yeah.
But then again, really, if the auditory is good, and that's the audio has been getting better over the years. When I first started, there could be terrible problems, like one person. I once did a class with somebody in England and everybody else was in America. I could hear everybody in America, but I couldn't hear the person in England. So those are just logistics, and yet one faulty logistic can make it very, very challenging for all of us. Luckily, the student in Great Britain could hear the students in America. It was just me that couldn't hear her.
Yeah.
So things like that.
Yeah, yeah. But so these things obviously have an impact on a human being. And as, you know, we're dealing with something that is about presence, is about paying attention to what happens inside, it's going to obviously have an impact on what's happening.
Right, right.
And what I'm hearing from you is actually on the positive side. It's a sense of having to pay more attention, but the good side is heightened awareness.
Exactly, exactly. I can feel it. I can't can't even, I don't know if I can articulate it more, but it is a very special feeling
mm-hmm.
of being right there and very, very tuned in.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe you can just stay with that, you know, in a way, because part of what's happening is right now we're talking, you know, on Skype. It's audio. Mm-hmm. We're not, you know, connecting with each other visually. And mm-hmm. So you're talking about that sense of paying attention to the voice and being very tuned in. So I'm a little curious as to what it would be like if we explore this a little bit in the present moment based on what's happening here and your experience of all these other sessions that you've had with people.
Mm-hmm. Fine. So you're asking me to sense of just basically to use the our interaction right now
mm-hmm.
as a okay, which is in a way a bit artificial because it's not a teaching situation.
Absolutely.
So I'm not
yeah.
sensing into what needs to happen. I think.
But right now, so that's a great point. You know, so mm-hmm. you're noticing the difference between this and a teaching situation, and you're noticing that, you know, there's something different that happens in a teaching situation because in addition to simply interacting with another person, you're also in charge of, you know, having this go forward and sensing what needs to happen at that moment.
Right, right. And my teaching is very, very much about what's happening in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
After years of teaching with an outline, I realized that the outline really got in the way. And so I work with small groups so that I can really hear in a deep, deep way what's happening with each person.
Yeah.
And what they're getting, what they're not getting, what's working, what isn't working.
Yeah. Yeah, so you really want to hear it, you know.
Right. Right, because for each person, we're each unique in how we process. And something that has even something like presence. For one person, it can mean something. We each could have an idea of what it means, a dictionary meaning, and yet that could be very different from what's happening in our bodies and our beings.
Yeah.
Of being with something.
Yeah, so presence is not an abstract term. It's actually that awareness of what's happening inside.
Well, part of it is the awareness. Part of it is how we bring that awareness, the quality of the awareness.
Mm-hmm.
That it, and this is what I find people I work with in Israel is one of the biggest things is the quality of that awareness. Often can have a sharper edge to it. There's a, it's very interesting culturally to work with different groups and what mm-hmm. happens for different cultures as they go inside. And there can often be a, thinking about having learned focusing in Northern California, there could be a more mystical, loving,
yeah,
different quality. And then I come to Jerusalem and work with religious women mm-hmm. who are therapists, and there's this so strong wanting to do it right, and oftentimes a critical edge. So the presence has that, is colored, and then the job is to help people to be aware of what colored glasses they have on at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And being with something.
Yeah, so very strong difference with that Northern California, let it be type of attitude. And the more intense, has to do it right, you know, attitude.
Right.
And that seems very palpable. You know, as you're experiencing it, it's something that feels very present in the interaction.
Right. And I'm also getting, as I'm sitting with this, the I'm moving my hands here as though there's the difference between being able to achieve a sense of spaciousness inside.
Mm-hmm.
Spaciousness for whatever is there to be able to come and show itself, or to be revealed.
Mm-hmm.
That quality that we aim for is often, I don't know if this is the right word, occluded, like clouds, like many, many, many clouds get in the way of us seeing clearly. And, of course, each of those clouds has wisdom in it. If we can see it and sit with it, it also has something to share. And yet, if we don't see it, then our vision is being, our inner vision is being clouded,
yeah,
in a way.
Yeah.
I say that with,
really
clouded.
So I'm hearing that sense, that image of, you know, something, you know, first something that wants to reveal itself, and then the image is of looking at a clouded sky and, you know, wanting to clear the clouds, but that the process of clearing the clouds is that each of the clouds has actually something to reveal, something that brings in some wisdom.
Actually, that's partly it.
Mm-hmm.
The actual experience seems more that the focuser is not aware that there are clouds. All that they're aware of is they're trying. There's something in the way. Sometimes they're trying to brush it away.
Mm-hmm.
And this is often, I think, something that's it's taught when we teach focusing, and yet many, many focusers miss it. They miss that looking for what's in the way, what is really predominant.
Yeah. So in that image of the clouds, it's not that the focuser looks at the sky with clouds, but in a way, the experience for the focuser is looking at the sky, but then there's this sense of, you know, maybe it's something in the way, but not quite knowing. And that actually, you know, often people are not, you know, so in touch with paying attention to what might be in the way.
Right. It's actually, the image that just came to me is somebody looking at a blade of grass.
So, so you were just, you had an image?
Mm-hmm. So, the image that just came to me was of somebody, the focuser, let's say, looking at something like a blade of grass or trying to read a book. And the clouds are coming over, but the person doesn't notice the clouds because they're intent on reading their book. So maybe they take their glasses off and try to clean their glasses, and they're squinting, trying to get it to read the book, but not stopping to look above them where the clouds are, to notice that, oh, there are clouds, maybe it's time to go inside and put a light on or something like that. So just like that, I've had the experience that people oftentimes when focusing will be so intent on being with a certain thing that they don't notice the all those little clouds that come in that have their own wisdom, like the part that's saying, this is dangerous territory, or who do you think you are to be doing this, or whatever those places are. So what I had said before, I don't know if this was captured, is that we're taught this when we learn focusing, to always look for those other voices. And yet in practice, I find oftentimes that's forgotten.
Yeah. So I love the example you give. It feels very beautiful. And I'm going to try and, capture what I heard from it. Is, in a way, what you were describing is focusing in the more traditional, everyday sense of the world being in sharp focus, tunnel vision. And that kind of sharp focus on something actually deprives us of all this other information of what's happening, these little clouds that actually have a lot to tell us.
Right. So notice the clouds.
Yeah.
And the other thing that I find as in teaching focusing that is often missed is acknowledging. Is that importance of receiving. And I don't know if this was Jean who had this image or Anne that I learned it from, but the idea of the cafeteria trays, you take the top tray and then the next one pops up, and you take that and the next one pops up. And even though we teach students to acknowledge what comes and to receive that as receiving a gift, if somebody gives us a gift, we're not going to stand there with our hands at our sides. We're going to need to actually take that gift. I wish you could see my hands right now. To receive it.
Yeah.
That we need to do something actively for the inner places. That all of these little things that might seem silly when learning it. And many times focusers think, okay, I've learned it. Now I can just go straight there. I don't need to spend the time doing this, this, and this. To me are very essential parts of the process.
Yeah.
And essential not in a book way, but essential in a gut way.
Yeah.
Like to really, for my insides, to really feel heard, I need to slow down. And to do each of these different things.
Yeah. And I think the part of it is these different things are not arbitrary, but they're part of observing what happens when it happens, in a good way. So what you're describing, that acknowledging, is really the equivalent of, oh, wow, and that, that enthusiasm that I sense in your voice as you're describing it. And so what you're describing is a sense of being very engaged with the process that happens.
Right. For both the focuser and the listener.
Yeah.
Yes, being engaged, and there's more.
Yeah. So something about being engaged, and there's more.
Right. Again, I got the image of being back doing focusing in touch. So I can again give another metaphor. The difference that I'm feeling here is the difference between having my hands on someone, just focusing on where their body is and what's happening inside of them, what's releasing, what isn't, to opening the space. That's, for me, focusing is a lot about opening the space.
Yeah, yeah. About, so it's not the same thing as, say, acupressure and releasing something, but it's about more like opening a space.
Exactly. And with focusing, okay, so then that same thing of reading the book or expanding your awareness to include the wholeness of your being, mm-hmm. which is the wholeness of your physical, emotional, spiritual being, because we're all of that. And when we think that we want to just focus on one particular issue or one particular whatever without being open, like really open to the whole field, it's that openness for me is that's what really facilitates the whatever it is that's wanting our attention, that's wanting to be heard, to be able to come.
Yeah. So the opposite of narrow, the opposite of tunnel, but that sense of openness, broader,
right.
larger, more things, noticing the little clouds, and being willing and able to be distracted by these things and engage with them, as opposed to, you know, that tightness and narrowness.
Yeah, I wouldn't even use the word distract. That willing to shift our attention to that which is predominant.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To that, if there's something like a cloud that's getting in the way of our seeing what we're being with, then clearly that cloud needs attention.
Yeah.
Before we can really go any further with the other place. And oftentimes that cloud might actually metamorphose into something that very, very precious. But the only way that we'll find that out is by spending time with it. Because mm-hmm. oftentimes those things that we think are clouds, and we actually don't think that they're as benevolent as clouds, we usually give other titles to them, like fears, or this is too scary, I can't be with it, or something. Oftentimes those things have in them a key that when the focuser's finally able to really be with them, I've heard people say, wow, why couldn't I have done that a decade ago?
Mm.
Or wow, that it, these life, almost life-changing things sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that, that ability to stay, to notice the cloud, to stay with it, to mm-hmm. bear it, to open up to it, and it has a life-changing quality.
Yeah, to be curious, and it's also something that even though something might feel very scary, to be able to be present with it. And that's another gift of focusing. We can feel that we're full of fear, and focusing gives us a way to be with something in a way that it can shift and not be so scary.
Mm-hmm.
So that curiosity. Did that make sense?
Yeah. So staying with that cloud, with that thing, so that it's no longer scary, but it has the potential to shift. It's not just a solid threat, but it's something that can change.
Right,
shift.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I noticed, by the way, as we've been talking, we have shifted, and we're in a very nice place of you describing the experience of focusing, describing the attitude, and it's a... I love the quality of the images and the ways of capturing the experience that's happening. But we're coming toward the end of the conversation. I want to check if we leave it at this or if there's something you might want to add to...
Yes. Thank you. There's one other element that feels very important to me. This is something that I only became aware of in the last few years, which is that, and I'll talk about my own practice, because my own practice is what informs my work with other people. Mm-hmm. The more that I do my own practice and learn and use it as a laboratory, and I use it for my own, my personal growth, obviously, but it's also a laboratory to learn what works, what doesn't work, what might be helpful to somebody else. What I realized is that for me, I would go inside and I would almost always have a similar felt, some kind of felt sense that was very familiar. Mm-hmm. So it as though I had tracks. I had gone down the same road so many times, that was nice and paved, and I didn't go to other roads. And I got actually this one idea from Neil Friedman, who's years and years ago I got this from him, and I love it, so I sometimes use this in my work now, is when guiding somebody inside, to imagine that you have a flashlight, and you can shine that flashlight into different parts of your being. And what I took from that is then I said, I like to say to people, maybe shine it into nooks and crannies that you haven't been to for a while.
Mm.
And that, when I started doing that with myself, it gave me the idea, almost the permission to go to places I hadn't gone to before. And to start to be with places that might not be the loudest place or the most painful place, but something that just was almost peeping its little head out and said, oh, I'm here, and have a look. So that together with one of my focusing partners, Bruce Nayawith, who likes to ask, where is their life? And I think he got this from Jean, but where's the vitality in here?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to what's not working and needs attention. So I have been gently introducing that more in my work and my personal work and my work with others, of that focusing is not just about looking for what might be the loudest, but to allow yourself to look in those nooks and crannies and listen to them, because they also have wisdom, to get off the usual road and allow yourself to go walking down the country lane once in a while.
Yeah. So looking for these more subtle areas that are not so loud, not so visible.
Exactly. That there can be amazing treasure in those areas.
Yeah.
So, right, right.
Thanks, Ruth.
This is part of the Focusing Conversations series of the Focusing Institute, hosted by Serge Prangle. All contents are protected by copyright. You can find other such conversations on our website at focusing.org/conversations.